To answer is human. To question is divine. Welcome to the world of the Hidden Gateway, an exhilarating podcast exploring the concepts humans have been struggling with since the dawn of existence, such as, who are we? Is there such a thing as good and evil, or are they arbitrary constructs? Does the paranormal exist? How can we evolve to a higher state? Can our mind influence what we term as reality? Providing a transcendental approach combined with hard-nosed humanistic analysis, we invite you on a journey to question your worldview in this theater of life. Join our host, Justin Williams, as he explores the outer realms of faith, the supernatural, human potential, and even our concepts of the universal creator with a fascinating array of guests. This is the unseen world, magical, mysterious, and mystical, where your only limitation is your imagination. This is the Hidden Gateway.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome you back to another episode of the Hidden Gateway podcast. As always, I'm your host, Justin Williams. And today we have a phenomenal guest for you. Our guest is Dr. William Makis, and he is the Chief of Nuclear Medicine and Oncology at the Wellness Company Canada. He attained a degree at the University of Toronto and graduated from McGill University School of Medicine in 2005 with specialty training in nuclear medicine, radiology, and oncology. Dr. Makis is a cancer researcher with over 100 peer-reviewed publications in international medical journals. He has been fighting corruption in Canada's healthcare system for many years, and today he is working hard to help transform our healthcare system. Dr. Makis, welcome to the Hidden Gateway podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, great. Hey, I want to just get right into it, doctor. You know, this COVID issue, this vaccine issue that the world has been experiencing for the past several years now, it's impacted lives in such a terrible way. And, you know, I want to talk about the cancer side of it. I've been hearing things of this turbo cancer that has developed in many people who have received the vaccine. Can you please explain to us how that develops, and does it come to, do you see that it comes from people who get the initial shot or after several boosters?
Yeah, so this turbo cancer that is happening in the vaccinated, that's the term that's being used to describe these very aggressive cancers that people who've had at least one COVID vaccine are coming down with. It doesn't seem to matter how many COVID vaccine shots you've had. One is sufficient to increase your risk of getting cancer, these extremely aggressive cancers. The cancers are behaving differently. And it's I think it's a brand new phenomenon specifically linked to the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines. I'm seeing it with patients who've taken Pfizer shots, Moderna shots. You know, there's even some suggestion that people who took AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson might also have an increased risk of cancer, but there's not enough data there for me to be able to conclude that yet. So for now, it really seems to be specifically related to Pfizer and Moderna, and it's happening in very young people. Now, it's happening across all the ages, but we're noticing it specifically in young people because young people are coming down with cancers they shouldn't be coming down with. Mm. They're coming down with, you know, you'll have a 19-year-old coming down with breast cancer. You'll have 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds coming down with stage 4 colon cancer. These are the types of, these are the types of cancers you see in older individuals, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s. You're not supposed to see these cancers. Certainly in large numbers, you're not supposed to see them in people in their teens, you know, 20s and 30s. So the cancer presents at stage 4. We're not picking these cancers up early. Wow. We're not picking them up at stage 1 or stage 2. They usually present stage 3 or stage 4. The tumors are usually quite large. They've been described as tennis ball sized or softball sized, football sized, even watermelon sized tumors. So they can get quite big. And they grow very rapidly. So oncologists are usually shocked. Sometimes they try to get the surgeon to get the tumor out. And then they go back, they do imaging, and they find out, no, it's already spread. It's already spread, you know, beyond the initial location to the liver or to the bones and so on. So they spread aggressively as well. And a key feature of these is that, and one reason why I noticed it and why other people, other doctors are now noticing it as well, is these cancers don't respond to conventional treatments.
Really?
You know, they're put on, the patients are put on standard chemotherapy regimen, standard radiation therapy, and they usually don't respond at all. If they do respond, they might, you know, respond for a couple of months, and then the cancer comes roaring back. And then the oncologist, you know, the oncologist will give patient prognosis, and they'll say, well, you know, you could live another 2 years or 3 years or even 5 years with this cancer, and then the patient dies 2 months later, 3 months later.
Goodness.
So the oncologists are not realizing this is a brand new phenomenon, and they're completely off in their prognosis. And once the treatments fail, oncologists are really not allowed to explore alternative treatments and alternative options. And so they usually say, sorry, we've done everything we can for you. And, you know, they essentially send the patients home to die. So it's a very sort of a tragic situation for a lot of people. When I'm looking at cases from when people are diagnosed with stage four until the point that they die, it's usually 6 to 12 months. And that's a very unique feature of these things. And if you're unlucky to have this cancer in the brain, for example, glioblastoma, or if you have one of these aggressive blood cancers like leukemias, diagnosis to death can be a matter of a couple of months, a few weeks, or even a few days. I've even seen a few hours. That's how rapid these things are.
That is horrible. Tragic, tragic, tragic. And you said that you find that it's mainly young people in their teens and 20s, et cetera. Is that right?
Well, so that's where we're noticing it.
Okay.
Because, again, these are populations that shouldn't be coming down with some of these cancer types. Something like breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer. You shouldn't see these in, you know, 18-year-olds or people in their 20s and 30s. And why are we seeing them in this age group? Because you'll remember that almost every university and every college, whether it's United States or Canada, mandated at least two vaccines for students to be able to continue taking classes.
That's right.
And even if you were taking an online course, you know, they mandated these shots.
Oh,
and when you mandate this vaccine on everybody in that group, that's where I'm seeing these explosions of cancers. So the universities and colleges were mandated, and then you've got the jobs, the professions that were mandated. So yeah. Doctors, nurses, all kinds of healthcare workers, police officers, firefighters, military, explosion of cancers in the military, teachers, right? Teachers, that's another big profession that was mandated. And they're dying in the hundreds, in the thousands. So it's a shocking situation to watch unfold.
Yes, it is. And I was going to ask you about the numbers. Based off the data you've seen, how many people have died from these cancers over the last couple of years since the vaccines rolled out?
So that is difficult because it's almost impossible to get this kind of data from official sources, certainly federal sources like, you know, the CDC or Statistics Canada. I think they are hiding those numbers in terms of the cancer deaths. Where I'm seeing the spikes will be data. For example, Ed Dowd has just recently published data on skyrocketing cancer deaths in the UK. He looks at insurance data. Someone like John Bedwin, he's an engineer, and I think in Minnesota, he obtained 1 million death certificates and then analyzed those and found skyrocketing cancers there. Ooh. He has the death certificates, the actual death certificates. So whenever we can get our hands on good data, that's where you're seeing these explosions. Another place where you're seeing it is certain drugs that are used in cancer are up several hundred percent in terms of sales. So that's another place where you could see it. Cancer drug sales are up have skyrocketed in the last 2 years, specifically since the vaccine's rolled out.
Now, with the cancers, when these people get the cancers from the vaccine, are these cancers that have that they have a history, a family history of? For example, my father had prostate cancer. Right now, say if I was to get the vaccine, you know, I've never gotten the vax, thank God. But would I be at risk for developing prostate cancer, or would, could it just be any type of cancer, any part of the body?
That's a good question. So there's sort of a two-part answer to this. Number one is that there are specific cancers that are increased in people who've had the COVID vaccine. I'll give you the top five most common cancers. The top five that I'm seeing are lymphoma, glioblastoma, which is a brain cancer, and then breast cancer, colon cancer, and lung cancer. Mm. Those are the top five. If I expand it to top 10, there would be things like testicular cancer, melanomas, sarcomas, ovarian cancers, and leukemias, the blood cancers. So those would be kind of round out the top 10. Now, for someone who's had a family history of cancer, they would be at a higher risk for sure.
I see.
They have a predisposition, right?
Yeah, right.
And so I've seen cases where people have a predisposition, they have, and they're perfectly fine. They have the vaccine, and within a few months, they develop an extremely aggressive cancer. And unfortunately, what happens in those cases is that the oncologist will just say, well, of course you got cancer because, you know, you have a family history or you have some kind of a genetic predisposition. Mm-hmm. But that person may not have gotten cancer if they didn't have the shots.
Had the vaccine, right.
And okay. And so that kind of muddies the waters a little bit, unfortunately.
Yes, it does. Interesting. Very interesting. Now, one thing that at one time was a big topic of discussion, I have, you know, saw it in the news from time to time, was the vaccine shedding. Now, for those that have not received the vaccine, and from what I understand, the shedding is a real thing. Could we be at risk? You know, if we receive that shedding from someone who's been vaccinated, would we be at risk for developing cancers?
So that's another excellent question. Difficult question to answer. First thing I'll say with the shedding is that, and you know, a lot of us that have talked about shedding have been hit with this. Oh, this is a conspiracy theory. This doesn't exist, and so on. Well, you know, the interesting part about that is that the description of shedding comes from Pfizer. It's actually Pfizer that alerted us to the shedding phenomenon. It's in their clinical trial documents, and they describe it as environmental exposure through inhalation or skin contact of their product, right? So their product is the lipid nanoparticle with mRNA. And they warn people in the clinical trials that if a pregnant woman is exposed to their product through inhalation or skin contact, so she didn't get the injection, but she was exposed, and this is shedding. The only difference is Pfizer doesn't call it shedding. They call it environmental exposure. But if a pregnant woman is exposed, then the people who are running the trials had to notify the Pfizer safety officer within 24 hours. And record this as a risk. Now, for risk of what, we don't know. They don't specify. They just say you have to report it to the Pfizer safety officer. So shedding exists. It's a real phenomenon. It can happen through exhalation of exosomes that may have the mRNA or the spike protein, or through bodily fluids. Now, the mRNA is present for about a month after injection, and then it looks like it degrades. So you could shed it during that time. And of course, the spike protein seems to be shed for at least 6 months after your last dose. Now, the key question is how much damage can shedding do? You know, the reports that I've heard, and there's always a small percentage of people who react to shedding. I've heard things like, you know, people feel very sick, they feel fatigued, they can develop rashes, for example. Women's menstrual cycles may change. I'm starting to hear the occasional person who might have developed blood clots after being exposed to shedding, or someone who's been shedding, you know, or they've been in the environment of someone who's been shedding many times, can someone develop cancer simply from shedding? I would say, I hope not. I would like to believe that it's not possible, but we're at a situation where we just don't know for sure. If it does happen, it should be very rare, because when you're exposed externally to, let's say, the lipid nanoparticle or the mRNA or exosomes with the spike protein, well, it should be small quantities. It should be very small quantities. And how do those quantities get inside you? Well, maybe you inhaled some particles, or maybe you touched some bodily fluids, but it should be very small quantities, and that shouldn't cause problems the way that vaccinated people who had the injection, and it that injection, and most of that injection goes into the bloodstream and causes problems. So, you know, there's a world of difference between the two situations. So I'm hoping that the risk is extremely small in terms of developing cancer from shedding, but I cannot tell you that it's impossible or that it cannot possibly happen.
I see. And I remember probably about midpoint during the vaccine rollout, there were some scientists that were talking about nanotechnology that would be in place in the vaccines. And then on social media, you saw these various videos where people had magnets sticking to their arms. Is that true? And if so, could that nanotechnology be one of the causes of people getting cancers?
Well, I can't tell you if there's, you know, if there's any nanotechnology in the vaccines or not. I just don't have that information or evidence of that, right? The question is, what are all the components of the vaccines? And even Pfizer and Moderna are keeping that a secret. Now, they call it a trade secret. I read a Bloomberg article that talked about how, I believe it was certain politicians wanted Pfizer to disclose all the components of the vaccine and so on. And apparently there were 280 components in the vaccine that are proprietary, that Pfizer will not even release because it's like a trade secret. So God only knows what else is in these shots. I can tell you that initially people who might have thought, well, it's just the lipid nanoparticles and the mRNA, well, we found out that that's not true. We found out that there is DNA contamination in every single vial of Pfizer and Moderna. And this has been proven conclusively in many labs, initially discovered by Kevin McKernan, U.S. geneticist, who was doing some sequencing, RNA sequencing, discovered there's DNA contamination in these vaccines. It was confirmed by another geneticist, Philip Buchholz, at University of South Carolina. It was confirmed in Germany. It was confirmed in Japan. And it's been admitted to by the FDA. It's been admitted to by Health Canada, by the European Medicines Agency. They just say, well, yeah, okay, we know about it, this contamination, but we're not worried about it because we don't think it causes any problems, but we're not going to do any tests to find out. Wow. But this was, even a year ago, this was not known. So we didn't know that there are billions of copies of DNA plasmids and DNA fragments. Now, these come from the manufacturing process, because when they decided to mass manufacture the vaccines, they took a shortcut and they basically put the spike protein sequence into a DNA plasmid, which is a ring of DNA. They stuck that into E. coli. They grew billions and billions of copies of E. coli, then extracted it. And that's how they made the mRNA. But they were supposed to get rid of all the DNA that was used in the manufacturing process, and they didn't. And so this is, I know it's not what you asked, but it's another example of something that's in the vaccines that should have never been there, and initially wasn't disclosed by Pfizer and Moderna, and they knew about the DNA contamination. They just didn't disclose it to the regulators. So I can tell you that I can't speak to, you know, heavy metals or nanotechnology may or may not be in the vaccine. But we actually don't know everything that's in these vaccines.
Wow, that is scary. And it just seems that people are not informed. I cannot imagine. Well, maybe I can imagine, because people have been doing it, right? We don't know what's in the vaccines yet. People are trusting their doctors, trusting the media to go ahead and get the shots. You know, that is just, you know, that It blows my mind that people do that, but that is the world we live in. People need to do their research, and that's why I do this show, right? To put out the truth, to have people such as yourself on here to speak the truth to the masses. Now, is there anyone, any politicians in Canada that you know of that is going to bat for the people of Canada or even here in the United States in regards to these cancers, the turbo cancers that you all have seen being formed in people?
Well, right now, no politician has really, I would say, accepted that there's this possibility or this risk that these vaccines could be causing cancers. Certainly, the medical establishment says it cannot happen. All the regulatory agencies say it cannot happen. This is something that I'm attacked on a daily basis, especially on social media sites like Twitter. I'm attacked by the community notes. The community notes actually use hit pieces that were written about me by sort of mainstream physicians like David Gorski, who is a surgical oncologist in the United States. And he just wrote this piece that said, oh, I don't believe this exists. This is all made up. This is anti-vax nonsense. And he basically ignores the thousands of cases that are, being documented on social media. I've published hundreds of cases of suspected turbo cancer. He doesn't look at any of the information. He just blindly says, this doesn't exist, and let's just not ask any questions. So that's where we're at right now. But I can tell you that in Florida, the Florida Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph Latipo, has come out and said, there is DNA contamination in these vaccines. That DNA contamination represents a potential risk of causing cancer. And he asked the FDA for explanation and to see if they've done any testing of vaccinated people to see if this DNA contamination has integrated into their genome, picked up by their cells and then integrated into their DNA. And there's tests that actually can be done to determine that. Kind of very specific genetic testing. And he's asked FDA if they've actually done any kind of testing to determine what is the risk of integration. And he basically didn't get an answer from the FDA. So he said, okay, well, these vaccines have to be halted until we get some answers. And he's the first politician leading the charge in actually outlining this risk and the potential risk of turbo cancer. I don't think he's referred to it as turbo cancer. I think he simply identifies it as a cancer risk, but he's the first politician, and I think he's doing the right thing. This is absolutely the right move. These things should have been taken off the market a long time ago for many other reasons: blood clots, myocarditis, right. Autoimmune diseases, problems. Children are being harmed by these vaccines. That's clear. Immune systems are being damaged. There's a host of reasons why these things should have been taken off the market a long time ago. But now we have an additional reason. That's this DNA contamination, potential cancer risk. So Dr. Latipo was the first one that I'm aware of in the United States. I know that Texas has filed a lawsuit against Pfizer for misrepresenting the safety of their product. I believe it's the Texas governor that filed. I'm not sure the exact person who filed that. But I know that there's a lawsuit that's been filed in Texas by a politician. In Canada, unfortunately, there's nobody yet. But I think if anyone is going to be interested in this, it's going to be Alberta Premier Danielle Smith, who has, expressed that the unvaccinated were heavily discriminated against during the pandemic. And, she has expressed some interest in this area of looking at these, these COVID vaccines. So we'll see. It's sort of a work in progress.
Work in progress. I got it. Thank you for that. Now, I would imagine that the death rate from these vaccines, with people acquiring these turbo cancers and amongst other things that cause death, has not even hit its peak yet. And if that is true, what would you tell people in regards to a timeline where we could really start seeing massive deaths from this?
Well, I can tell you that all people have to do is look at excess mortality statistics actually released by the various governments So, for example, Canada just a few weeks ago released a report called Deaths 2022. That was by Statistics Canada, which clearly showed there are 49,000 excess deaths of Canadians in 2022 compared to 2019. 49,000 more Canadians died. Now, it's spread out over different categories, and I can go into more detail with that. But every country that had, you know, uptake of the first two doses of about 85% and booster shot uptake of about 50 to 60%, each of these countries is seeing a skyrocketing excess mortality. This is all-cause mortality. You're seeing this in the United States, excess mortality in the hundreds of thousands. In Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Germany, all these countries that are highly vaccinated have skyrocketing excess mortality since the vaccines rolled out. The governments are not denying that there's excess mortality. You had the BBC reporting, increased mortality in the United Kingdom, for example, Australia, openly saying, you know, we've got record excess deaths. We don't know what's causing them. Where they're lying is they're lying about the causes of those excess deaths. So I'm of the opinion that the vast majority of excess deaths since the vaccines were rolled out are due to the vaccine. This is based on an autopsy series that I've done with Dr. Peter McCullough. We've done the largest autopsy series of sudden deaths of vaccinated, COVID-vaccinated people in the world, about over 300 autopsies, which show that about 74% of the sudden deaths could be directly attributed to the vaccine. So the vast majority of these excess deaths are going to be due to the COVID vaccines. This is what the governments are hiding, though, and they're spreading around the causes of these deaths. They'll say that some of the deaths are due to COVID itself, even though we are several vaccines. I mean, according to the Canadian government, we are seven vaccines in terms of recommendations, and yet we have higher COVID deaths now than we did at the start of the pandemic. So they're still attributing a lot of deaths to COVID, which I think are vaccine deaths. Then you do see an increase in deaths, cardiovascular deaths, cancer deaths. They're trying to hide the cancer deaths. And then there's, you know, they'll say deaths of unknown or ill-defined causes, and they'll just leave it at that. And they'll say, well, we don't know what caused these deaths. Doctors are blaming a lot of the excess deaths on long COVID. So that's an out for the doctors who recommended the shots. Because if they say, well, I think it's the shots, then they're legally liable. You know, okay. Pfizer has legal protection for now.
Yes.
But the doctors don't.
Okay.
And so, you know, the doctors really can't admit that these shots are causing excess deaths. So they're going to blame long COVID. And they'll say, well, you know, we're now discovering that a mild infection, COVID infection that you had 2 years ago is causing blood clots and myocarditis. And, can you know, well, I don't think they're even admitting to the cancers yet for long COVID, but we're going to get there. Once it becomes apparent that you can't hide the cancers anymore, they're going to blame long COVID. Just, you know, wow. You'll see that's it. We're going to get there. So that's an out for the doctors, right?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you mentioned how the governments are hiding this information, the research, the data that's there that you've seen. Why is it a money grab? Is it a power? What is it? Why are they keeping the information from the public? Obviously, you've talked about the doctors, right? Because I see why the doctors would want to, you know, even though I don't think it's right. But when you talk about government officials or even globalists, what's the issue here?
Well, you know, I mean, you could go into all kinds of theories. The simplest and most straightforward, and I'm sure it's not the only reason, but I mean, the simplest reason why these vaccines, these COVID vaccines are still on the market is it's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
And when you look at, I mean, I would encourage anyone to look at the revenues of Pfizer last year. It was over $100 billion.
Jesus.
If you combine it with the revenues of Moderna and biotech and, you know, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, I mean, I think we're looking at over $200 billion and more that have been made on these products. They're still continuing to push the products on everybody,
right,
on children, pregnant women, young people, on everybody. They're clearly they have no interest in taking these things off the market, no matter how many people die. When you look at the VAERS report, there's tens of thousands of deaths. There's, I think, over a million injuries reported in VAERS. In the largest database of vaccine injuries, which is the WHO Vigi Access database, there's over 5 million adverse events documented with COVID vaccines. How many does it take to take these things, exactly, to take these products off the market? Right. But they're not taking them off the market, right?
Goodness gracious.
So you could say, okay, well, maybe it's the money. Maybe it's the $200 billion. Maybe it's something else, right? I mean, who knows? You know, maybe they do want to tie these vaccines ultimately to some kind of a digital ID or a digitized right. health records.
Yes.
Right. The vaccine is the easiest excuse because they thought that everyone was going to take it. Mm-hmm. And so if there's something that everyone's taking, well, they say, we need a record. We need a record of your vaccine history. And everyone took the COVID vaccine. So everyone needs to have a digital ID, for example, right? They tried it with the vaccine passports. They tried to have everyone have vaccine passports to be able to access restaurants and entertainment venues. And that thing eventually crashed and burned as well. But there was a very serious attempt to have that up and running as well. And Justin Trudeau, our prime minister, Canadian prime minister, has talked about tying vaccine status to your passport, right? To be able to travel and so on. So there's other reasons as well, not just money.
Yeah, I certainly believe it. I agree 100%. Now, Dr. Mackis, let's talk about detox. What can people do to detox this product and mitigate potential harm?
So my approach is a broad approach. I think certainly if you've had some kind of reaction after these shots, you need to be very proactive and almost very aggressive with your approach to detoxing. Now, some people attack me on the term detox because they'll say, well, you can't detox from this genetic injection and so on. Well, whatever. If people don't like the term detox, then at least, you know, you can try to decrease the damage that's being done to your body. Whether we can get rid of the spike protein 100% or not, I don't know. We need to do tests on that. But certainly you could minimize the damage and lower the risks of sudden death, for example. And so the approach that I take is a very sort of a holistic approach. And I always start with a long-term fast, a three-day fast, water fast, because that's something that everyone can do. You don't need to buy supplements. You don't need to spend any money. Everyone can do a three-day fast or a four-day or a five-day fast with just water. And what that does is that it puts your body in a state of ketosis, and it activates several mechanisms. One of them is called autophagy, which clears the body of dead cells, cells that have been damaged by the spike protein, for example, immune cells that have been damaged by the spike protein. It tries to clear out those damaged cells, and it stimulates production of stem cells that get sent to various parts of the body to kind of renew your body. It's sort of a survival adaptation and a mechanism. So fasting, it has to be at least 3 days, though. So intermittent fasting, like 16 hours or 24 hours, is not enough. It has to be a three-day fast at least. And then, you know, then you have to look at the spike protein itself. That's causing the damage. Now, you know, it was in the mRNA was in the lipid nanoparticle. The lipid nanoparticle ended up in the blood. It delivered the mRNA all over the body. There's spike protein all over the body. There's nothing you can do about, you know, that's already happened. There's nothing you can do about the lipid nanoparticle that's delivered, you know, this spike protein all over the body. But you can try to break down the spike protein, for example. So I'm with the wellness company with Dr. Peter McCullough, and, you know, their flagship product is Spike Support, which has natokinase. Natokinase is made from fermented soybeans discovered in Japan. It's an enzyme. It's an enzyme that breaks down the spike protein. It also breaks down blood clots as well. So it's a blood thinner as well. And so, of course, blood clots are a big problem in many vaccinated people as well. So natokinase is an enzyme that breaks these things down. Bromelain is one that Dr. Peter McCullough has been talking about recently as well. That's an enzyme found in pineapple plant. Another enzyme that's been proven to break down the spike protein. Will it break down all the spike protein in your body? Probably not. It's, you know, one thing I've realized is that one of these things alone is not enough. You know, it's not enough. You have to attack it from, you have to attack this thing from multiple angles. So natokinase, bromelain, some people try serrapeptase or lumbrokinase. These are similar enzymes that break down the spike protein. Then the next approach is taking something that blocks the spike protein. And the most famous one is actually ivermectin. Ivermectin binds the spike protein and can prevent it from doing damage, causing damage to your cells. Quercetin is another popular one. So ivermectin, quercetin, there's black seed, Nigella sativa. There is Artemisia annua. So a lot of people talk about Artemisia and Artemisia extracts. It's actually used to treat malaria. It's one of these, another one of these Nobel Prize winning drugs, just like ivermectin was a Nobel Prize winning drug, or a compound, I should say. And so you know, break down the spike protein, block the spike protein. I would also suggest an antioxidant. Vitamin C is obviously a great antioxidant to be taking on a regular basis. But NAC, N-acetylcysteine, is another very powerful antioxidant that can clean up a lot of the damage that the spike protein leaves behind. It seems like the spike protein creates inflammation, and it's a kind of inflammation that creates free radicals, reactive oxygen species that can damage the mitochondria. So it could potentially be causing these chronic fatigue syndromes in people. This is the stuff you want to clean up. This is the stuff you want to protect your cells and your tissues from. So antioxidants are very important in that. And some people have their favorite antioxidants. There's all kinds of antioxidants that you can take. Get your vitamin D levels up. That'll protect you not just against future infections, but it'll protect you against cancer as well. High vitamin D levels have been associated with lowered cancer risk, for example, right? And so obviously, you know, exercise is another good thing. The problem with exercise, though, is that if you've had heart damage and you don't know about it, you're actually putting yourself at risk of a sudden cardiac event, like a cardiac arrest. So what I'm seeing is that a lot of people who are vaccinated, who are very athletic people, these are people who run marathons, who do triathlons, who participate in sports, football, soccer, basketball, you name it. They're actually, when they exercise, they're putting themselves at a high risk of a cardiac event. So if you're a very active, physically active individual, you actually may want to do some cardiac testing. Like you may want to pay for a cardiac MRI, for example, and have a look, make sure that there's nothing going on in the heart, because you don't want to be one of these people that dies on the court or dies on the field when you're playing soccer or playing football or rugby or what have you. You know, it's such a tragedy to see like the fittest people, the fittest people on the planet, people who've been in the Olympic Games, people who are, you know, national world level athletes are suffering the most from vaccine injuries. It's such a tragedy.
Exactly. You see it all the time. Well, I don't want to see it all the time, but I saw it more probably last year, or, you know, over the past year. I haven't seen it a lot lately, but like you said, these world-class athletes dropping dead on the soccer field, basketball, football, weight training in the gym, young, healthy guys and girls in their 20s, you know, even some in their 30s. It's crazy. It is really crazy. Wow. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Mackus. You know, I just got a couple more questions for you. This has been a great, great interview. I appreciate you once again for being on the show. First of all, I get a lot of people that ask me about the next plandemic, scandemic, whatever you want to call it, right? You know, and I tell people it's not a matter of if, but when. And one thing that I've heard thrown around a lot is, was it disease X? I think that's what it is. What can you tell me about that? Is that, should that be a great concern to people?
I think most people shouldn't panic. I think we shouldn't panic about disease X or a future pandemic. You know, if there is going to be something, there are things that have been simulated. They've done sort of simulation exercises of like a para-influenza virus that has a high fatality rate. The WHO has talked about H5N1. spreading. That's an influenza that has, I think, like a 50% fatality rate. Mm. You know, there are some exotic diseases like Nipah virus, Marburg virus, Ebola virus. So those are the hemorrhagic fevers. You know, I don't know what we will be hit with in the future, whether there'll be, it'll be something real or something completely simulated. Mm-hmm. You know, but what I would say is that, you know, I've been looking at Dr. Zelenko's videos on this because he actually addressed fears of a future pandemic before he died. And he had some interesting, you know, thoughts on this. And he said a lot of these are RNA viruses, and RNA viruses can be dealt with the same way that people were dealing with COVID-19.
Okay.
So that's vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, quercetin, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. That was enough. That was enough to protect yourself against COVID-19. And it would be enough to protect yourself against potentially any other future pandemic if there is a real one. You know, so if there is a real outbreak of some kind of a more fatal influenza or even a more fatal coronavirus, because they've talked about, you know, when they do these simulations, they talk about, so WHO has a list of like 10 potential viruses that could, you know, make a future pandemic. And they talk about, for example, well, what if COVID-19 combines with the original SARS? So SARS-CoV-1 or the MERS, which was the, I think it was the Middle Eastern coronavirus that had like a higher fatality rate.
And I then, remember that.
So, so you end up with something that has a higher fatality rate. But again, people have everything they need to protect themselves. Like I said, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, quercetin, or ivermectin to get the zinc into cells, which acts as an antiviral. Those things are enough to protect you. Hydroxychloroquine as well, for example. The point being that I would not take another mRNA vaccine. I don't care what they will declare. I don't care if they declare a pandemic with something that has a 70-80% fatality rate, like a Nipah virus or a Marburg virus or an Ebola virus. I will never take an mRNA vaccine, no matter what they come up with. And this disease X, I think the reason why this disease X is being thrown around is because they wanted people to continue taking these mRNA vaccines every 6 months. And that was the plan, was to have something like 85-90% of people hooked on these mRNA vaccines. They could then link them to a digital ID, passport, probably carbon credits. And then they could limit, you know, make sure you can't travel, you can't fly, and so on. This was kind of the dystopian future envisioned by the World Economic Forum, the WHO, and so on. Well, that whole thing has crashed and burned. So nobody wants the mRNA vaccines anymore. But meanwhile, they're building mRNA factories all over the world. But nobody wants these things, right? And so, you know, I've read the literature, and they talk about that they really need to scare people into taking these shots again and really force people. They want to mandate vaccines. They just don't know how to do it.
That's what I'm thinking. You're telling me that these factories are being built all over the world. So they're investing a lot of money into these factories.
Exactly.
And they don't want to lose money, right? They want their dollar to profit. So,
yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, and so one thing you know, when we talk about the WHO pandemic treaty, which I think is supposed to be finalized in the next few months by May of this year, in that pandemic treaty, not only are they taking over the pandemic response of over 100 countries or any country that signs up on this thing,
that's right, yeah.
They're completely taking over the pandemic response, but in that pandemic response is mandatory vaccination.
Wow.
And they've talked about this, that the next pandemic that hits, they're going to try to mandate a new vaccine on people. And I think this is the danger. This is one of the big dangers, is that they've got this mRNA technology. They want everyone taking it and be really hooked and dependent on it. People don't want to take it anymore. So they're going to have to force people. And one way to do it is to scare people with something frightening that has a high fatality rate. Mm. And the other way is to bring in mandates. And maybe the two go hand in hand.
But, right.
This is something that people will have to resist at all costs.
And then you refuse the mandate, then you go to jail. But once you go to jail, they say, oh, in order for you to go to jail to be here, you have to get a shot. So it's...
Well, that was the other thing is that, you know, they forced these shots on a lot of prisoners.
Yeah.
They just forced it on them, right? And you've got the quarantine camps, right? You know, you've got Australia that experimented with quarantine camps that looked like concentration camps.
Right, right.
I mean, this whole thing is extremely dystopian. And people are going to have to put up a very serious resistance to it.
Let's do it, people. Let's fight it. Let's fight it. It's coming. Let's fight it. Well, hey, Dr. Max, this has been great. One final question for you, sir. This is something I ask each and every guest that appears on the Hidden Gateway podcast, is to leave our listeners with what I like to call a token of love. And that's just simply something that you think or you feel they need to hear in this very moment as they continue their journeys. You've dropped great ones so far, but if you had to give one final word to the audience, what would that be?
You know, we've talked a lot about these shots and the dangers of the shots and so on. One thing I really want, I would love to see and would love to see people fight for is to protect kids from these shots, protect the kids, protect pregnant women. You know, these shots are damaging them. They're harming them. And so far, you know, no place has really banned these toxic products from being forced on children. You know, they're still offering them to, in Canada, to babies as young as 6 months old. I think even in the United States as well. You know, the federal government has put it on the childhood vaccination schedule. Now, I know it's probably up to the states to decide how to implement that. But, you know, like I really want to see children protected from this toxic, these toxic pharmaceutical products. So whatever you can do to protect kids, that's what I would ask people to do. Please protect kids from this thing, protect pregnant women, because this is our future, right? This is our future is at stake here.
That's right. That's right. That is so good. Thank you so much. And please tell the good people where they can find you, where they can locate you online, if you have a website, any social media, et cetera.
Well, thank you very much again for having me. I'm on Twitter at MacusMD. I have a Substack, MacusMD.substack.com. So I put out regular articles on a daily basis. And I even have an Instagram, WMacusMD. And I usually put all my Diet Suddenly reporting on the Instagram. I cannot use any text. So it's all just photographs because Instagram has repeatedly threatened me. And so this is another platform that there's a lot of censorship. But so far, at least, they're allowing the images to be posted. So those are the three social media sites that I'm on.
Very good. Yes. And I know all about Instagram. They actually shut my account down about a month and a half ago.
Oh, really?
Because of my content, just, you know, conversations such as this and, you know,
right,
being about
right.
The same thing. So, but hey, Dr. Macus, thank you so much again for joining us here on the Hidden Gateway podcast. Blessings to you, sir, and to our audience. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, stay connected with us at thehiddengateway.com. Shoot me email at support@thehiddengateway.com if you have any questions. And as always, thank you for pushing your mindset towards a better reality. And this will conclude this week's episode. Until next time, stay positive, stay questioning, be love, and be free. The Hidden Gateway, out.